future lay out there in the bullpen.
The starters are out. Now it's time to head to the bullpen.
Squad, bullpen, now.
Live from the Veritex Community Bank Studios, here are the producers of ESPN 97.5 and 92.5.
Go ahead, call the producers.
Who win it now?
Five and 92.5 is the bullpen with the producers here at ESPN Radio. I am Brian McDonald, found on Twitter at SagbyVMAC. Sean Makes from half the shows here on the station can be found on Twitter at Sean A. Makes. And our man Johnny Belmer is back behind the glass. You can find him on Twitter at Third Coast Johnny. You like that line, half the shows here at the station, Johnny? I saw you cackling a little bit there.
Yeah, I do.
Sean is now transforming into the hardest working man in our industry.
Welcome to the bullpen on Mapes 97.5 and 92.5.
I mean, the double-edged sword of that is they might add more shows to your you might be doing the whole day at some point. So be careful what you wish.
Maybe if we do like some sort of telethon donation
thing. I did hear a rumor at one point, and I don't know if I'm allowed to talk about this, but there was a rumor at one point that we might be doing like a 24-hour, like straight. I don't know what that would include of us, but I'm going to guess Sean will produce 20 of 24 hours of that marathon.
It's like a 12-hour stream for me.
Yeah, I'll take 2 hours. I think Johnny's got 30 minutes maybe. Maybe Cam Smith will come in for like 15 minutes.
Yeah, don't want to work those guys too hard.
But you'll get the other 20 hours. All right, today, if you don't follow pro wrestling and sports entertainment, you might not know this. Obviously, Sean does.
First of all, what are you doing?
I mean, Sean does. He's Mr. Sports Entertainment. But today is day one of WrestleMania. It's for the last few years been a two-day event, and tonight is night one. So we will definitely get into some WWE conversation coming up at 1:30. My buddy Kyle King, who will be doing a live stream on Twitch. On his Twitch channel, we'll give you all those details as the show goes on. But he will join us to talk about WrestleMania. And I have a feeling there might be a few more wrestling topics that might find their way into the show, maybe during Mount Rushmore Plus One. Spoiler alert. At 1:45, there might be some wrestling there as well. But right now, let's kick it off with the Astros, man. I kind of felt good, you know, coming off of what we were talking about last. I remember how many games they had played.
They had played two.
So we were coming off
Thursday, Friday.
Right. So they were 0-2 when we did the show last week, and Fromberg had that 6 walk outing where they got crushed.
But Christian Javier
we were coming off. I mean, even though they lost, we were coming off a semi good feeling, at least that Christian Javier had looked good. This week, not as much, because I mean, despite them giving us a silver lining by winning the series against the Toronto Blue Jays, they didn't go into Arlington to face the Rangers and get smacked in two, and it's not even as close as that sounds. It was 10-0. The Astros got a couple of meaningless runs there at the end to, I guess, make the score look closer. Not really. But Hunter Brown, man, like, he was pretty good first start, and then 3 innings, 5 earned runs, gives up 8 hits, 4 walks, just absolutely crushed. He's obviously a part of a large group of Astros pitchers that we had question marks that we thought could be, you know, really, really good this season, or, you know, we could go the other way like it did last night. But your thoughts on Hunter Brown? Just, man, he looked like second half Hunter Brown last night.
Yeah, I was going to say it was a lot like what we saw last year, not just in the second half, but even the first half where he was kind of inconsistent, where he would have a good start, followed up by
he faced the A's and dominate.
Yeah.
And then when he didn't face the A's, it was not as great.
Yeah, and so this was one of those, you know, the flip side of it where it's like, oof, this is some bad stuff. I mean, even the first inning, getting out of the first inning, having to throw 30 pitches, that already puts you, or 29, but that puts you at a, like, oh, this is not going to be a good start.
Yeah, you start talking, so it's like, well, maybe we can get 4 from Hunter Brown today.
Yeah, maybe he works quickly in the second, and, oh, God.
Well, it got worse from there, 5 runs in the second, including, I think this is what part, I mean, obviously the Rangers part of it makes it sting, but I think part of it that makes it sting even more is the fact that part of that 5-run second inning is, you know, Adolis Garcia hitting a 3-run homer. Because I think he's probably, would you say he's public enemy number one amongst the Rangers roster for Houston Astros fans? Because, I mean, him getting on the board with a 3-run bomb kind of, at that point, I think probably making most fans feel like, okay, this game's over. We can go ahead and start looking ahead to Saturday.
Yeah, exactly.
I mean, him being the author of that makes it hurt even worse.
Yeah, I would say Garcia won, and then Seager and Semien probably 2 and 3.
Yeah,
in some order.
Semien for sure. Semien, yeah, because Semien got into with Maldi last year.
Yeah, maybe Semien 2, Seager 3, and then Evan Carter. Something about Evan Carter.
What is? Hold on. What's it about Evan Carter? This guy? He's played what, like 20 games in his career?
Yeah, and 7 of them were against the Astros. Well, 8 now. 8 of them were against the Astros.
Maybe I'm just going to assume he went to Duke. Maybe we could put Duke on Evan Carter. That'd be a reason why we could hate him.
Ba-ba-ba.
Although Astros prospect Joey Lupofito, who we had on the Killer Bees on, I guess it was Thursday, he also went to Duke. So. Yeah, I know. He's gonna have to earn our love after going to Duke there. Did you find a college for Evan Carter?
No, I didn't, because he went straight from high school to the league.
Okay, there we go. Entitled. Entitled high school straight to the pros?
He's 21 years old. That's why I hate him.
Man.
That's why I hate him. He's 21.
Yeah, he's 21, man. He's only going to get better, and he's already really damn good. So, I mean, I kind of just want to wipe away last night's game. Not that, you know, you can from the standings, but you're going to have games like this, and you move on and hope that... I mean, you got J.P. France on the mound. I don't know. I mean, the first time through the rotation, he was, you know, inarguably the worst of the five.
Yeah, I mean, but also, first time through the rotation, they had the number one ERA in baseball.
Yeah, I mean, the only guy besides him that struggled the first time through, I guess, would have been Fromber.
Yeah.
But France, I think, was probably the worst of the bunch. Do you have any faith that France gets the Astros back on the board and stops the bleeding here?
Maybe the Rangers got tired from scoring all the runs.
They got tired from running around the bases.
Well,
and they're going to pace themselves tonight.
The Astros have that thing where if they score 10 runs the next game,
that's true. They score none the next day.
So maybe that happens with the Rangers.
I guess
that's my bright side.
If you're looking for bright side here, like, France wasn't great his first time out, but you're facing Sonny Gray today. No, I'm sorry, not Sonny Gray, John Gray. And his ERA, I assume it's only one star, but 1227. So not a great time for him in his first outing. So maybe the Astros bats can get on board. But, man, we did a segment on the Killer Bees, I guess it was Thursday, how their record at the time, 2-5, now 2-6, was fake. Because when you looked at a lot of the basically, when you looked at anything else other than the overall record, like, they were positive in run differential.
Yeah.
Their ERA and their runs allowed were both like fifth overall and sixth overall. They were second in the league in home runs hit. Everything pointed to, like, okay, 2-5 is not real. But then 10-2 happens.
Yeah, it was all their losses in all their losses were kind of games where the Astros played well, and then they had one inning normally pitched by a bullpenner that cost them the game. That you can point to, and you're like, the seventh inning of this game was why they lost. The ninth inning of this game is why they lost. Like, you know, whether it's Presley, whether it's
Hader was the author of
Hader on last Sunday, whether it's Abreu gave up 3 runs in his first outing. Obviously, we know the Parker Mashinsky.
And he's no longer on the roster. He got sent back down to make room for J.P. France.
So you can look at all the losses before last night and be like, okay, like, the Astros played well in this loss. They just lost, like you were saying. Like, the you felt better about them than their record showed. Last night's tough. Last night's
especially
a tough,
since it's in division against the team that eliminated from the playoffs.
Yeah.
Because I think part of the story that, you know, Astros fans, including myself, and I don't know if you're a part of this as well, have been telling ourselves this offseason, is like, man, the Rangers pitching staff sucks. Like, okay, great, their offense is good, but the Astros are going to run away this division.
They got guys like Cody Bradford running out.
Yeah, and then they you only score 2 runs, and the 2 runs you score, as few as those runs are completely meaningless, because it was after you were down 10-0. So the stories that we were telling ourselves about the Rangers, and you know their offense is great, but it's not going to be able to overcome their pitching, and then you go and lose 10-2 with one of the guys on the mound. I think a lot of people would have said advantage Astros with the starting pitching matchup last night, and then you lose 10-2. It's like, well, maybe we need to reevaluate about where the, you know, Astros v Rangers is right now.
Yeah, I mean, definitely at this point of the season, the Rangers have come out come out really swinging as opposed to the Astros. Like, I mean, like we said, like some of that record is fake, but there's when you, you know, pull it up on Sports Reference, it's 2-6 versus 5-2.
Yeah.
It's that's
it's, man, they need, I mean, I have every faith that they're going to turn it around. This is not me. This is not,
they're only down 4 in the division.
Yeah.
So. 150 something left.
Well, what is their what are they on pace to win though, Sean? I mean, they're only on pace to
we're on pace to lose that bet that we made at LeBurge.
Yeah. Yeah. Was it 92.5?
92.5. We need
for those who want to follow along with us, Sean, myself, and Joe George put a team bet together when we were in LeBurge for Astros and over 92.5 wins on the season, which I still think they get there, but I'm feeling, you know, a little less confident by the day. And then we also
they need 91 more wins.
Yes. Yeah, that's yeah to get over. And then we also put that we also put a bet on the Astros to win the American League, which
one step at a time.
Unfortunately, the Rangers are also in the American League right now, so maybe we
and
can
the
get,
Yankees.
Yeah. God, but the Blue Jays are too. Damn it, the Astros sort of dominated the Blue Jays, won that series 2-1. We'll carry some of this conversation over the other side, but let's talk about a pitcher who hasn't sucked, because Hunter Brown was total ass last night, but. Christian Javier, too many walks in that series clinching win against the Blue Jays. I think he had 5, and I crushed Fromber last week for having 6. So I don't want to completely dismiss those walks. But he had a great first start against the Yankees. Then he follows it up against the Blue Jays and goes 5 scoreless. Obviously, you would hope that he would. I think he only had 5 strikeouts in 5 innings. You'd hope he'd maybe go a 6th inning. You'd hope he'd have a few more strikeouts, a few less walks. But I think all signs, if we're doing stock up, stock down, which we might do a little bit more in the next segment. I mean, clearly, I think stock up on Christian Javier. He lost weight over the offseason. The fastball is up in velocity. And the early results have been great.
Yeah. The first game was probably the best, best Christian Javier performance that you could reasonably ask for. I mean, obviously, this guy's been part of no hitters, so you know,
he has, at Yankee Stadium in the World Series.
Yeah, he has. I guess there is another level of performance that he can go, but you know, reasonable
no hitter in the World Series.
Yeah, but a reasonable, like the first game, 6 innings, 4 hits, 1 walk, 6 strikeouts, like boom. Love it. That's great. Last the most recent start against Toronto was kind of the what you would expect is like the median start for him, like kind of the average.
Yeah, if
like,
that's the start. Median. I mean,
or
yeah.
the average, I should say, like the average good start.
Okay,
like the average start that's not a complete.
Yeah, because he only went 5 innings. There's some walks in there.
Yeah, but that is like a, you know, through his turn the rotation, you're like, we got it. Yeah, that was a solid Javier performance. So yeah, I mean the stock has to be up for him because he was the guy who had a lot of questions. And last year,
you feel like he's answered those questions, or you, I mean, I don't. We can't say 2 starts in like he's completely erased all doubt. But where are you in your confidence? I mean, has he rebuilt most of it they lost last year?
He's rebuilt most of it, but partly because I thought a lot of last year was him. Especially late in the year, just running out of gas.
Yeah, because he was in the WBC.
WBC, first full year starting.
Right.
There's a lot of things you can go. And it's like, oh, and his fastball velocity is down. Huh, wonder why.
Yeah, there might be a cause and effect there.
Yeah, so I was already kind of primed to believe in a Javier bounce back. And through 2 starts, you know, again, if we're going to hand wave a lot of the bad stuff with the Astros saying it's early in the season, we can't fully be like 2 starts. Boom, we're back.
I think what this says is we need to go back to LeBurge and Lake Charles and put a
Cy Young
bet down on it. Hey, Johnny Bellmer, you go in with us if we make a Christian Javier Cy Young bet? Will you go in with us, split it up, me, you, and Sean?
I actually like that. Yeah, I would. I'll go in with you.
Okay. All right. I think we got a team bet.
We'll
have to look up the odds during the break.
Galan George will be going to LeBurge.
Or soon?
A couple weeks from now, the 24th.
Okay. All right. Yeah. Are you going with them?
Yes.
Okay. Well, then, yeah, maybe we will get down a Christian Javier AL Cy Young Award.
Venmo is open, Johnny Bell.
You just just send them money. Like this has nothing to do with the bet.
Trust me, I'm good for it.
Yeah, I mean, look, Sean is working 95% of the shows here at the station. He needs some help. Like I'm not saying this is for $1 a day
just
for
a
the
tip?
Cup for the price of a cup of coffee. You can support a Sean.
Should I ask for tips on the back of my laptop?
Yes, put a sticker on my.
There you go. Yeah, put
or
your
have the guitar case open. All right, on the other side of the break, we will come back and talk more Astros, get into some stock up, stock down on some of the hitters. We spent most of the first segment talking about pitching performances, but let's talk about some of the good and some of the bad for these Astros hitters when we get back on the other side of the break. And if you have any thoughts on what we're talking about with the Astros, later we're going to get into the Rockets, the Texans, and of course, we will take your WrestleMania calls if you have any thoughts on that as well. Give us a call on the HR&P listener line, 713-780-3776. The bullpen will return with ESPN 97.5 and 92.5 in 3 minutes.
ESPN 97.5. You're listening to The Bullpen on ESPN 97.5 and 92.5.
Sean Mapes. Find him on Twitter at Sean A. Mapes. Do you know whose theme this is, Sean A. Mapes? If you missed this.
Our tribal chief.
Thank you. If you missed the theme music of our tribal chief, acknowledge him. He is the billion-dollar draw. He is the one in God mode. I would be quite disappointed if you missed the theme of the tribal chief on this, the day of WrestleMania night one.
Yeah, no.
Entertainment, Sean, I wouldn't expect you to miss it.
There's two nights of WrestleMania?
Yes.
Yes.
Oh, good.
Your tone needs to reflect the idea that there's only two nights of WrestleMania, John Belmer. You can find those terrible opinions on Twitter at Third Coast Johnny. Only two nights of yes, there's two nights of WrestleMania. It's WrestleMania, Johnny.
You think the mania can only be contained to one night?
You got The Rock involved. You think it's one night?
Yeah, I didn't think it was two nights. No. I don't know why you'd need two nights for
well,
it.
Well, I'm not going to get into the full story, but it started because of the pandemic, and then they just they kept it. I think later in the show, Sean and I think Johnny's got a wrestling theme music challenge for Sean and I. I'm feeling optimistic. I've watched pro wrestling for a long time, but he's not called Sports Entertainment Sean for nothing. So, I'm going to have my work cut out to see if I can beat you in this head-to-head wrestling theme music challenge. But let's get back into the Astros again. If you have any thoughts on what we're talking about here with the Astros, later Rockets, Texans, give us a call on the HRP listener line, 713-780-3776. So, some of these Astros hitters, We spent the last segment talking about pitchers. Stock up, stock down on these Astros hitters. Stock up, two guys in particular, Yonner Diaz and Jeremy Pena. Both guys, well, Yonner's actually hitting 400 right now with a 1,000-plus OPS. Pena just below 400 at 393, what a bum, with a 1,000-plus OPS. Jeremy Pena also has two home runs, and that was obviously a big part of last season. Like, oh my God, like the daily tracker of it's been this many days. It's almost like the workplace, the sign of the workplace this many days since our last accident. We should have had one of those up for this many days since a Jeremy Pena home run. And it was a lot because the last one was like sometime early in July. But he's had two home runs this season and the slugging percentages there. And then Yonder's picked up right where he left off. I guess you would probably say you feel far more confident in the sustainability of Yonder Diaz continuing this, but your thoughts on what we've seen from Yonder and from Jeremy Pena?
Yonder Diaz is kind of any reservations that you might have had.
And what was the reservation?
Where being
like his chasing pitches and not taking walks?
A little bit of chasing pitches, yes, a little bit of that, and a little bit of the kind of book being out on him after his rookie year, and the idea of now that he has to be the starting catcher, he has to prepare to be the starting catcher. Maybe the hitting side of his game tails off a little bit because, you know, he's not just DH.
Yeah,
because
last year,
was.
I think half his starts were at DH. Well, I don't know the exact total, but a lot of his starts were at DH.
Yeah, so there was a little bit of just like, you know, should there be a little bit of a tail off because of the extra workload that he's having to endure? And there has been games where he's DH'd this year, too, and Caratini has been behind the dish.
And that's big because I wasn't sure when the season started, like, because he's obviously not going to – I mean, even the most active catchers are going to catch, like, 130 maybe games, like, on the high side. Yeah. That's on the high side. More likely to be, like, 110 to 120, yeah, on the high side. So the question was, like, you know, how would he be used? Because I didn't have faith that they would be willing to play him at first base on his days off from catcher, because that seems to like be what a lot of, like, Buster Posey and Joe Mauer, they eventually transitioned to first base in their career. So it's nice to see that they're still finding spots in the lineup for Yiner. I mean, how could you not? His bat's so good.
He's hitting 400.
But obviously, coming off the years with Dusty Baker, we can't always depend on logical thinking when it comes to certain players. So I'm glad to see that they're still having him involved in a big way in the lineup, even when he's not catching.
Yeah, and he already has kind of, again, any doubts that you might have had, you're kind of like, no, okay, this is going to kind of continue. Not hitting 400. Yeah. Although maybe hitting four. No, not hitting 400.
Should we have a 400 watch?
Yeah, yeah.
I think Ted Williams, you're on notice. You're the frozen head of Ted Williams is on notice. Yonder Diaz on today, April 6th, the night one of WrestleMania, is still hitting 400.
Still.
Now, if he's still hitting 400 at Money in the Bank or SummerSlam,
I think that's when we tune in.
Johnny, do you know when SummerSlam is?
Oh, I have no idea.
I should just check in with Johnny throughout the day if he knows random things about wrestling.
A wrestling question at
him. Money in the Bank, is that a real pay-per-view, Johnny, or did I make that up?
You made it up.
No, that's real. Oh, see, Johnny just doesn't know sports entertainment.
I do know sports entertainment, but I don't know whatever wrestling is. I don't know if I can call it a sport.
Wow.
That's why it's sports entertainment. Okay, anyway.
The views and opinions of John Belmer do not necessarily represent those of ESPN 97.
John Belmer, stock down.
Stock down.
Yiner
Johnny
Diaz.
Belmer.
Yiner Diaz, stock
down. So, like, obviously, like you said, he's not going to hit 400 all season, though we'll check back in again at SummerSlam. We had this question came up on the Bees, I think it was on Friday. Like, do you think he's got the upside of possibly being the best offensive catcher in baseball? I mean, there's some names in there like Adley Rutschman and Will Smith. William Contreras in Milwaukee has been really good, but where do you see Yiner's upside at the plate?
I think he's right up there with those guys.
I think he's got more power than those guys.
He definitely does, and I think that it was something that I realized, I don't know, probably Wednesday last week, where I was thinking about the whole drama from last year with Yiner Diaz. This guy should play more, and I was asking Paul and Joe, like, when do you think that question will go away every time he has a highlight at the plate where it's like half of Astros Twitter is be like, can't believe Dusty didn't play this dude.
Not yet.
No. And I was like, I think it will peter out like in May, you know?
Okay, so around the time of Backlash.
Yes,
okay,
of course. And then I was like, although – when the All-Star teams get announced, they'll probably bounce right back up.
Oh, my God,
because he's likely to be an All-Star.
Okay, so it's not going to go away by then, but also, like, into, you know, I can't remember exactly when these awards are announced, but, like, if he gets a Silver Slugger Award,
it's going to
come all the way back again. So I think best case, like, Christmas, we can finally put Yiner Diaz, Dusty Baker jokes aside.
I think it'll tail off and then have peaks. You know, it'll be like a peak moment of, like, where there's a day where everyone's like, can you effing believe that this guy?
Is that going to be the most overused, like, semi-joke for Houston sports Twitter over the next year?
Either that one or the flip side of that where you go, thank you, Dusty.
Dusty
Baker did say, well, thank him.
Yeah. So, I don't know when that's going to happen, but maybe it'll happen sarcastically.
I'm thanking him every night. Every night he gets on base, the scores a run.
Yeah, maybe that could be like Jeremy has the what's wrong with the Spotters lineup bit. Maybe that could be our bit. We just tweet out thank you, Dusty, every day.
Or how Brian McTaggart has like
the youth has served or
– yeah, like a little catchphrase for every home run that gets hit. Yiner Diaz is just Yiner Diaz, period. Thank you, Dusty.
Thank you, Dusty. Yeah, maybe that's it. So the other guy we mentioned, Jeremy Pena, there was some talk about him messing with his batting, his swing during the offseason. I mean, I hate to ask the question, like, is he fixed after, you know, 7 games?
But in the doc, it does say.
I know, because I'm going to ask the question. I hate to, look, you caught on to something here. I'm putting this off as, yeah, I hate to ask it, but I'm totally going to ask it. I'm definitely going to ask it. But when you look at Pena, like, his power disappearance never made sense last year. Because, I mean, look at Pena. He's not a guy that looks like he wouldn't have power. Yeah. I mean, he's a big guy of both size, and he's well built. There was no reason other than maybe a broken swing why his power would disappear. I think his rookie year he hit 21, maybe 22 home runs. I think it was 21. But I don't see any reason if he's been able to maybe fix his swing like was talked about during spring training and is able to, you know, just as his maturation as a player, start laying off some of those breaking balls he used to chase on the outside. I don't see any reason why a guy built like him couldn't return to 20 home run form. Is that fair?
No, that's very fair. It's just about, I mean, it sounds...
What do the rest of the stats look like?
No. As far as him, you know, that power coming back, it's simple as he just needs to hit the ball in the air instead of on the ground.
Yeah.
That was a lot of his issues, that the ball just wasn't popping off the bat.
That does sound like swing. Like, because the part of the talk about what he was doing in swing was specifically working on elevating the ball, like trying to get just under it to create the backspin to get lift.
Yeah, and that's, I mean, two home runs in, what, eight games?
Eight games,
as opposed to zero home runs.
Over the entire second
70
half?
70 or however many he played. So, I don't know, you know, I don't know if he's fixed. I know you would hate to ask that.
I wouldn't ask him, but if you want to...
It's ridiculous
If you want to run with the question, who am I to stop you, Sean?
I would say...
If you want to answer if he's fixed, call 713-780-3776.
I'd say he's not quite all the way fixed now, but the signs are promising that he will no longer be Adam Everett at the plate.
Oh, my God.
He'll at least be a valued member of this
Adam
lineup.
Adam Everett used to... I don't know, like... I don't know who else I don't know who else at the station has like an irrational hate of a certain player, but there was definitely a time in my life as an Astros fan where I had an irrational hate of Adam Everett. It was mostly because back in the day when you didn't have, you know, a DH to play with and you had Everett Osmus pitcher spot, it's like, God, we're playing a six-inning game every single day. It was so frustrating.
A third of the lineup
are
pitchers. Yeah.
Probably not one of my finest moments, but I was actually at the game where Carlos Lee ran into Adam Everett and broke his leg, and I stood up and cheered. Yeah, that's probably not my finest moment. Wow. Yeah, I know.
Did you cheer when Matt Schaub got hurt too?
No, I'm a bad person. But I'll admit it. You know, that's the difference between the two psychopaths and the people who are redeemable. Because I will admit my faults. Johnny Bilmer's shaking his head.
I mean, that is the first step to redemption.
Submitting our faults.
Yeah.
Before we go to break and John Bellmer completely disavows himself of knowing me, Verlander getting to start tomorrow in Sugarland, unless plans have changed and I haven't heard about. Sounds like they're probably going to give him two rehab starts before he gets called up. So not when we do the show next week, but maybe the week after, although I think that might be one of the weeks we're taking off. So we might not get to talk about Verlander starting for a little bit. But I mean, first blush at looking at the rotation, it sounds like they're not going to go six-man rotation right away because they have too many days off coming up.
Yeah.
And they don't want to space out their guys. But who do you think gets removed from the rotation? I mean, the obvious first choice would have been, I think, well, just move the fifth starter. But Ronel Blanco just threw a freaking no-hitter. So, I mean, maybe it's dependent upon what he does on Sunday. He pitches against the Rangers. But, I mean, is it Blanco? Is it France? Like, who are you moving from the rotation?
We'll have a couple more turns, or I guess two more turns.
Two more turns through,
Yeah, so there will be more information than one start, which is a no-hitter.
Are you saying that's a small sample size?
Yeah. I'm saying if he throws another one, then he's safe.
I'm just saying, I'm just saying Ronel Blanco is on pace to give up no hits this season. That's all I'm saying.
If it goes Don Larson on us. No, I think that it's between France and Blanco. It will depend on how Blanco follows it up. And correct me if I'm wrong, but does Blanco have relief experience? Because that could be part of it.
Yeah, because you would expect one of them, whoever gets moved out, is not going down to AAA. They're going to the bullpen to help with some of the middle relief that's been such an issue.
I'm sorry. I didn't fully walk that out.
No,
yes,
I know it. I'm saying that
whoever gets whoever loses their spot in the rotation, I still want them on the big league roster.
Yeah, I'm trying to remember. Because Ronel Blanco got playing time last year, but I think it was just as a fill-in starter.
I don't remember.
I mean, we can obviously look it up on Baseball Reference during the break. Yeah. But, I don't see a huge difference there. But
I would just say whoever, you know, because a lot of it is comfort when it comes to – not just the.
And maybe that one of those guys, if the question is, are they comfortable as being a true reliever? Okay, you got the answer.
Yeah. So Ronel Blanco pitched 17 games last year and only started 7 of them.
Oh.
And the year before he pitched 7 games. Again, these are tiny samples, but he didn't pitch. He didn't start a single one of them.
Okay, so he has plenty of relief experience. So yeah,
that as far because the process of warming up for starter versus a reliever is different. Starter, you have more time.
Yeah,
it's very easy.
And it's regimented. You know exactly when it's going to be.
Exactly.
And maybe the answer is if you don't want to change up the routine like massively, you just treat them as like a 2-inning piggyback to Javier, who you don't expect to go deep in the games.
That could be another.
Or Hunter Brown, who obviously went 3 innings last night.
Yeah, you can do something like that where they're long relievers, but that you come in kind of with a plan.
Like you kind of know that, okay, this is my day to
pitch. Especially with the back end of this rotation where it's like either France or Hunter Brown or even Javier, like chances are they're not going to go deep in any of these.
No, you're not. They're not going 7 for sure.
That could be the fix. But yeah, I mean, whoever loses their spot in the rotation to me is they're still going to be pitching in Houston.
Yeah, absolutely. All right, on the other side of the break, we got to talk about maybe do a eulogy for the Houston Rockets. We had some hopes last time we were on these airwaves on Saturday. We had some hopes that the Houston Rockets would find a way to continue the push and get into the NBA play-in tournament, but it's gone pretty much completely downhill since then. So we will talk about the Rockets on the other side of the break. ESPN Radio 97.5 and 92.5.
ESPN 97.5. Oh, broadcasting live from the Veritex Community Bank Studios, it's the Bullpen on ESPN 97.5 and 92.5.
ESPN Radio 97.5 and 92.5. I don't know, part of Sean's take there on Jey Uso, who you hear the theme music of right now, got out over air. But
rat.
You're calling him a rat?
Yeah, he stole the belt. He stole the belt from the American Nightmare, Cody Rhodes.
Yeah, I mean, that was a while ago.
It was Bush League. There's cameras all over the place. How'd they let that happen? Oh,
man. Yeah, wait,
just because the ref... the ref wasn't looking. Don't they have replay?
They do, but, you know, it's, look, like...
unchallengeable play?
Yeah, it's not reviewable. That's the problem. Like, you know, for progress had already been, you know, the quarterback was in the grass, for progress. You know, these things aren't challengeable.
Disgusting.
It is. You know, like someday we're going to get robo umpires for WWE.
I hope we do.
And then we're going to get the correct calls. We don't have to worry about these controversies anymore.
You know what? It won't matter come Sunday when Cody Rhodes finishes the story.
The disrespect of our tribal chief will not stand on this show. I mean, I know Johnny Belmer's got a strong take about who wins the main event of Night 2 of WrestleMania. Johnny, who are you picking in that main event match on Night 2 of WrestleMania?
Booker T.
Good call. All right, before we
the
get
five in, time becomes the sixth time. According to
five time. Before we get into the Rockets, Sean, tell the people about where they can come out and see us on Monday.
On Monday, you can come out and see us. At, the Glon George. Hey, Glon George.
Well, I was going to say you do that show, but you do basically all the shows.
Yes,
so.
And The Killer Bees, a show I do not do. We'll be broadcasting.
You want to do it on Monday?
I'll pass. we'll be broadcasting from the Space Cadet Bar, join the guys, and then watch the National Championship game and Astros-Rangers. Probably Astros-Rangers and also the National Championship.
Yeah, because the National Championship game will come on at 11:02 p.m. our time. Yeah.
Old man B-Mac complaining about the start time. On Monday, they'll have a special burger and beer combo deal, bucket specials, and victory beers for the Astros game.
But now, what are victory beers, Sean?
Thank you for asking. Well, if you arrive by the third inning, and the Astros win, a.k.a. get a victory, you will get...
Wait, that needs to be clarified?
You will get... It's not in the copy, but I'd clarify it for you.
Oh, thanks.
You'll get a victory beer. So, Astros win, you show up before the third inning, or by the third inning, you get a free victory beer. So make sure to get to the Space Cadet on Monday to hang out with us and stay for the Astros, and also... the national championship game.
If you can stay up to 1 a.m. Just going to finish off the old man.
Should the listeners be offended? You felt the need to explain what victory meant?
No, he asked. He asked what a victory beer was. So I had to explain it to B-Mac.
I was setting him up. Because I think that is part of the copy. Like, what is a victory beer?
What is a victory beer is literally in the copy.
I was being cheesy and setting him up. That's just good teamwork. See, we're a tag team here.
So, yeah, come out, watch the Astros, and watch the national championship game that tips off 30 minutes before last call.
So Fromber would be on the mound for that. Are we feeling like Fromber could get us a victory beer? I mean, he's a bit Jekyll and Hyde.
What happened the last time Fromber Valdez pitched against the Rangers? Oh my God!
Oh my God! Maybe it'd be a Drown Our Sadness beer. Do they have the Drown Our Sadness beer?
God, I hope UConn wins at least.
Yeah, everyone's rooting for that. I mean, Dan Hurley, so easy to get behind.
Can we get victory beers for a UConn win?
I feel good about our chances for victory beers for UConn. All right, let's get into the Houston Rockets. Unfortunately, back-to-back losses to the Warriors and the Heat. And before that, they lost, to the Mavericks? And who was the other?
T-Wolves,
right. So
they haven't won a game since the last time we've been on.
God, so we're the problem. Time. We're the problem, clearly.
We're the solution.
We could be. But it looks, I mean, not mathematically, their season isn't over
the
yet.
Warriors magic number is one.
Yeah, I mean, it's over. I just don't want to get well actually by someone on Twitter like, well, actually they went out. Like, yeah, I get it, but
I'll wait 3 days and then be right.
3 days and be right. Some interesting comments from Ime Udoka, the Rockets coach, after the loss to the Warriors, calling out his team for being soft. Let's hear from the Rockets head coach right now.
It looked like the moment was too big for a lot of players out there. So it looked like deer in headlights a little bit. Either look soft or scared, one or the other, and that's two bad things for a lot of our guys to have, and didn't rise up to the moment like I thought we would.
So, I mean, let's start there. Is that a fair comment by Rockets head coach Ime Udoka?
I thought that they were. I mean, it's hard to say watching it at your home on TV that they look scared or soft.
But, yeah, because he's obviously seen them in the huddle. He's seen them before the game.
Yeah, he's looking them in their eyes.
Right.
But I will say that I'll agree with the first part, that the moment did look too big for them. And more so, the moment looked perfectly sized or a little too small for the Warriors.
For a team who's won four titles?
Yeah, especially the dude that really sends you home is Klay Thompson.
Clay, all the talk have been like, oh, Clay's washed, Clay's this, Clay's that. And yeah, that's the problem. It's
Wednesday
just,
night.
Is he moved himself into a special tier of Rockets killers? Or at least of like post-Hakeem Rockets killers? Because I don't want to go back.
He's probably up there.
I don't want to go back to Hakeem time because that's the.
Carlos Boozer is also on that list.
Oh, yeah. Yeah, that was.
LaMarcus Aldridge, Dame Lillard.
Yeah,
the 2014.
Yeah, Dame Lillard.
The 2014 when Trailblazers.
Chandler Parsons lost them on the screen, and that.
But I think that Clay definitely is in that conversation, and he did it again last night. And yeah, that's what it felt like to me. It was a situation of one team that's been in these kind of games, and this is really, I mean, it ultimately wasn't actually for. A lot in the standings.
Yeah, it really didn't mean all that much for the Warriors.
But
I think they get to the postseason either way.
But it means a lot when you have Tari Eason saying, Warriors, come out to play.
All right. Did you have a problem with him wearing the T-shirt on the bench while not playing?
Not really. Because, I mean, if you're going to make the video, like, you have to kind of then lean into it. And my take was because Tari Eason was getting...
Because clearly the Warriors players had problems. We don't have the audio ready, so don't worry about it, Johnny. But Klay Thompson
lit
him
up.
Not happy about that shirt being worn on the sideline.
But, I mean, it's a situation where I feel like when it happened, though, everyone was like, hell yeah. Like
Yeah. With the initial video. Because I think at the time they were down one game, right?
Yeah, that's when they had moved it to one. But the problem ultimately was A, that he wasn't playing. But also they made it seem like that Tari Eason just missed like this game.
Where it seemed like the Warriors thought like, oh, he's got a grade one ankle sprain.
Like he's ducking him.
He could have gutted out and got on the court. It's like no.
He's been out for like 3 months.
Yeah, like, check the injury report. What's going with him is far more severe.
But, I mean, he was getting absolutely crushed. And, not just by the Golden State Warriors, but also, you know, on social media and by talking heads like us. And ultimately, I'm like, aren't we kind of letting the 12 Rockets that are on the court off the hook?
Sure.
By saying that, like, Tari's and you gotta play and back it up if you want to talk smack. Yeah. It's like, well, he had guys that could have backed it up for him.
Right, yeah. His boys definitely could have had his back.
Guess what? The moment was too big for him.
Yeah, it did. Like, and I don't even think, like, in a perfect world, if Cam and Şengün were available, I don't even think they make a difference overall. It just felt like a moment that a team in the first year of actually playing for something.
Yeah.
Because it would have been the same for Cam and Şengün, too, because obviously Cam's a rookie. Şengün dealt with the same losing under Steven Silas that, you know, guys like Jalen Green did. So I don't think it ultimately matters if those guys had even been available. The Rockets, look, there's steps to this. So they took a massive step from, what, 22 wins last year? They're
38 now.
Yeah, right. And their Vegas projection this year, I think, was 31.5 or 32.5. They've taken a massive step forward, but there's still way more steps to go before they get to where we want them to be.
And that's why, like, the chase for the 10 seed, I always kind of like, I kind of rolled.
It's kind of like a loser chase, doesn't it? The 10 seed?
Yeah, like, I kind of rolled my eyes, like they're eliminated from the play-in. Oh, it's like, okay, they would have played one more game. But the experience is the idea that you would have played, well, it wouldn't have been the Warriors, but you would have played the Lakers, more than likely, in the 9-10 game. And you would get a situation kind of like the one that you got on Thursday night, where you have a veteran team that's motivated to win the game.
You've been playing in L.A.
It's a big spot, and you got to show up. And on Thursday, I think that the Rockets kind of got that experience of playing an experienced team.
Yeah, that's a good point. This kind of was their playing game.
Yeah, so. It was their, like, hey, like you said, there's levels.
That's actually a really good point. Like, the experience, like, what they needed as, like, a measuring stick to kind of get a feel for the moment, what they need to do to get there next year or past that next year, they pretty much already got it.
Yeah, and it's not a situation where, you know, it's a measuring stick and you realize that they're that much worse than the Warriors. It's a measuring stick as far as this is the
experience.
This is the type of intensity that you need to play with, the type of seriousness that you need to play with in a game that actually means something. And yeah, I mean, they got that experience. With any other coach, I probably would be less sunny about, like, well, they learned some lessons along the way.
Yeah, like if Steven Silas was still the coach. Not that he would have ever gotten them to this point, but...
But with how Ime Udoka laid it out in that, and that's what he said publicly in the media.
Good point. I think... He called him soft through the media. Imagine what he said behind closed doors.
Yeah, so I think that it's a situation where, you know, you kind of give your coach something to get about.
I think I have confidence, like, as you're saying that. I hadn't really thought of that angle, but you like other coaches, maybe you wouldn't feel confident that the right message was being given. Like, it might be two rainbows and sunshine. Like, oh,
it wasn't our night.
It was so close. It wasn't our night. Like, we'll get them next year. Like Ime, I almost got through the full segment without saying Ime. But Ime is a different guy. Yeah,
MF-er, you're soft.
Yeah. So I have complete faith. And let's follow that up with one quick question before we go to break. And I know we're way over. I'm sorry about that, Johnny B. But you don't acknowledge your tribal chief, so your opinion doesn't matter. Confidence in that the Rockets will get to the actual playoffs next year. Not just in a play-in game, but actually in the eight-team bracket.
The expectation should be to make play a seven-game series. So that's whether you're the sixth seed and you don't have to be in the play-in, or you're a seven or eight and you need to win one game to get in, that should be the expectation. And I feel pretty good that with the flashes that we saw from Jalen more recently and Şengün throughout the year, and the ability that they'll have to kind of figure it out playing with each other, or maybe they make a big move and then they're shooting up the standings in that way.
Trading for Stephon Diggs.
Yes, exactly. I feel pretty confident. I mean, I can't, you know, 75% that they make the yeah, that they make yeah, the playoffs next year.
Like, I feel good about them being at least in like a 7-8 seed sort of spot where they're one win from getting in.
You also kind of look at the team, like the Rockets, obviously with their youth and just kind of where they're at as an organization, kind of the arrow pointing up next to their game.
Like Warriors, and I mean, obviously the Warriors just pumped them the other night.
Warriors, Lakers, arrow down.
Right, exactly. Yeah. All right, we got to get to break on the other side. When we get back on ESPN Radio 97.5 and 92.5, we got to talk about the Stephon Diggs trade and the questionableness of the contract extension, not a contract extension, the contract restructure that he got after the trade was made final. That when we return on ESPN Radio 97.5 and 92.5.
ESPN 97.5.
This is The Bullpen on ESPN 97.5 and 92.5. Live from the Veritex Community Bank Studios, here are the producers of ESPN 97.5 and 92.5.
All right, Sean Mapes, whose theme music is this?
This is Seth freaking Raw.
See, I'm going to lose this. I don't know what Johnny has in store for us for this wrestling theme music challenge that we're going to do at 1:15, but I feel like I'm going to lose this, Johnny. I feel a little bit of reservation putting this in Johnny Belmer's hand because he is a hater when it comes to professional wrestling.
I've been impressed with Sean being able to nail these.
I know
though.
He's gotten all of them. You got Jey Uso last segment. You got, who was it the segment before? I forget who it
Roman
was.
Roman Reigns.
Roman Reigns, yeah, of course. I mean, acknowledge the tribal chief. But, Seth Rollins in the main event night one of WrestleMania tonight, along with his tag team partner, Cody Rhodes, against the final boss, The Rock. And our tribal chief, Roman Reigns. Johnny Belmer, who you got in that match? You taking the side of The Rock and Roman Reigns or Cody Rhodes and Seth Rollins?
I'll take Cody Rhodes and Seth Rollins.
Okay. It's interesting. All right. He is refusing to acknowledge our tribal chief. That's what I've learned from this.
I can't tell you why I'm taking them. I'm just taking them.
Yeah. I respect that.
Johnny is a man who walks to the beat of his own drummer. He's a lone wolf. That's what I think I've learned here. All right. So let's talk about the Stephon Diggs trade to the Houston Texans and the opposite of an extension that he got the day after, as I mistakenly kind of said going into break. So let's start with the trade itself when it was made. I mean, we're not going to play the audio because it's too long, but there was, former Longhorn. Was it Emmanuel Acho or Sam Acho? I forget.
Well, they're both former.
I know, but which one actually set the
contract? Emmanuel Acho.
Emmanuel Acho. Try to put the idea out there that the Texans got fleeced. Now, maybe the opinion on whether or not they got fleeced gets changed by what they did to Stephon Diggs' contract the next day. But when the trade goes down, your initial thoughts were?
I disagree with Emmanuel Acho. Yeah.
Hook him.
Respectfully, sir. No, I think that I don't know how you can look at it as a bad trade for the Texans. Not just the fact that, you know, you're getting a guy who basically, since his first or second year in the league, is just a walking 1,200 yards and eight touchdowns. Also, the fact that, you know, they, when you take the move in totality with what they've done so far in the draft, they traded out of the first round. They traded that 23 overall. Yeah. They got a second round pick this year, 42 overall, and next year's second from the Minnesota Vikings. Right. And the second that they traded out in this trade is that Vikings
second. So they basically just traded back, like, what was it, 19 spots, essentially.
For Stephon Diggs,
yeah.
And then they got a fifth and a sixth.
Right. Hey, so not
The fifth and the sixth this year?
I believe the sixth is this year and the fifth is next, or okay. It's the reverse. I know they're not in the same year.
Okay. So,
Yeah, but that drops the value of giving up. I mean, not that I care about fifth or sixth round picks, but if you're just looking at pure value, that does drop the value down to, like, okay, maybe kind of in value gave up a third, not even a second at that point.
Yeah, and so taking that as a whole, you know, ignoring what they did on Thursday, right after Kalon George. It got announced.
Timing is horrible.
No matter what show I work on, and I work on all of them.
I mean, I will say,
news always breaks.
How could that happen? You work on every show.
News. I guess I can't complain too much because Stephon Diggs got traded literally 5 minutes before Dell show.
Yeah, that's true.
But still, I'll still complain. But yeah, ignoring what happened with the contract restructure, I think just the trade in itself, good. Good trade. I don't really give out grades.
The Sean Mapes stamp of approval.
I don't really give out grades on it, but I saw that Jeremy Branham gave it an A.
Well, he is the NFL executive of the year. One of his multiple times. Yeah. I mean, he's
multiple times for the same year.
Yeah, he's won it like 30 times already for this year. It's amazing how often he wins that award. So the other side of it, and this is I don't need to belabor the points you made because I completely agree. I thought the initial trade was absolutely a home run. I mean, if you're not going to get anybody like Stephon Diggs, for however much longer he has left in the tank. In the second round, and especially for a team that's trying to win right now. So I thought it was an absolute home run. And I do think, and that's the kind of the other part of this conversation, and we'll get into what they did with this contract in a second. But the other part of the conversation is like, okay, what does he have left? And I've seen a ton of people point out, you know, like, oh, the second half of last season, the seven games where people seem to forget, and I didn't because I had him in my most important fantasy league, so I was acutely aware of what it was first half and second half, and maybe the causes for that. But the offense changed because they changed offensive coordinators midway through the season, and they decided to be a running team. And now you can put some blame on Stephon Diggs for not handling that well, because certainly we've heard rumblings that he kind of made things worse, and then that's maybe why his snaps got cut. But I don't think there was any evidence that his actual game dropped off, because when you look at his first half of last year before they made the change in offensive coordinator, he has games of like 10 for 102, 8 for 111, 6 for 120, 8 for 121, 10 for 100, 9 for 70. I mean, he was still that guy. There was no drop off there.
He didn't get washed over the course of a bye week or however it was. So yeah, I think that it was the offense changing, and you know, some people are like, well, they started winning games when they changed that offense, and Stephon Diggs was still upset. I would counter back with, and it's not really a great defense, but Stephon Diggs was upset way before that.
Yeah, he's been upset for years.
It wasn't just because he wasn't getting touches.
He was mad the year before the playoffs when we saw him MFing Josh Allen on the sideline.
So it's not an issue of getting touches. It's an issue of not liking Josh Allen, apparently.
And that kind of brings up, and I know we're late to break, but we'll carry it over
here.
Yeah,
we can carry it.
You know what? Let's go ahead and carry over. And before we, because the next segment's Texans also, so we'll just carry over this part of the Diggs conversation on the other side of the break. So Texans conversation continues on the other side of the break when hour two of the bullpen starts on ESPN 97.5 and 92.5.
ESPN 97.5.